From the studios of WBAA Public Radio in West Lafayette, this is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We appreciate you joining us on the show this month. And if ever you have a question that you would like to get on this program, we encourage you to email that to news@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, let me ask you to, for a moment, share the both president's hat and the sports fan hat. As you sat in the stands at home football games, as you often do, and people who have attended the games know they always do the Where's Mitch thing on the scoreboard, when did it become apparent to you as a fan that it might be time to change head coaches, which has now just happened for the Purdue football team?
It's not a new question, whether in the stadium or just following the team at a distance, clearly we didn't have the kind of record that's called for and that we hoped for, and we're hoping for improvement or positive signs, but they weren't evident. And equally clear in hiring a new athletic director to a program that end-to-end across 20 sports is doing pretty well. In fact, last year was the best year in a good while across 20 sports, but we have one very obvious exception, and he knew what the job was, and he's the expert. So I relied on him to say if and when a change was in order. We conferred at halftime, Mike and I.
At halftime of the Iowa game?
Yeah, and decided that the time had arrived.
And did you get the sense that in hiring a new athletic director that Mike Bobinski wanted to or felt like he had a mandate to put his stamp on the program in some way?
Well, he has a mandate to do what it takes to have a first-rate competitive program. He knows that there are no constraints on his ability to manage that department and have the people he wants in all the key positions, and coaches being the most important. And that's what we hired him for. You know, every fan, I guess, thinks they'd make the best coach. I hear from a lot of, I think, would-be coaches. We're all a little that way, I suppose. But Mike's a pro with a proven track record and both judging coaches across a variety of sports and making smart moves when he decides one's in order. So let's hope that's what we're headed for.
So the talk has been a lot about the money of it all because, of course, Morgan Burke has told me on a number of occasions that, you know, when football revenue goes down, which you get with declining attendance, which they've seen, it puts a strain on the athletic department as a whole because football and basketball are the things that fund most athletic departments, Purdue's included. So needs to be an expensive buyout of the end of Daryl Hazel's contract. You're also about to spend $6 million to put lights on Ross-Ade Stadium. You've talked on this program about wanting to make sure athletics is financially self-sufficient, not supported by the University General Fund. Is this an area where you might have to make an exception because of all of these different factors coming into confluence?
No, and it won't be necessary. There remains the view you just expressed that football and basketball, they are the two revenue sports. That's absolutely true. But rapid increase in television revenues associated with the Big Ten network and other contracts has provided a major new source, far and away the biggest source of revenue for our program. So, sure, it's not a good thing when, let's say, football revenue declines, and we look forward to building it back. But the money will not be a problem, and we will not be imposing fees on students, on the 98% plus of our students who aren't able to play on competitive sports to subsidize that program.
But aside from imposing new fees on students, might you have to take dollars from other parts of the budget that come in from other places other than student tuition and fees?
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking, but athletics will continue to run on its own bottom, as they say. And I don't think we'll have a lot of trouble doing that. But you're quite right that these are new expenses, some of these that we didn't wish for. Lighting and things like that will be handled as part of the capital budget, and so it's not a cash outlay of that size. But, you know, we'll see what's coming, but we intend to be competitive, and between a what's been a very well-managed program, which does have financial reserves that it's put aside, and oncoming media revenue that comes whether you have an undefeated football team or an unsuccessful one, I think we'll get by just fine.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. Remember, you can also send questions in of your own to news@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to talk to you about some things that came up at some recent meetings. You were talking at a recent University Senate meeting about reducing the ability of people to smoke on campus. You said, look, there are about 21 spaces that are designated smoking areas on campus, and you said you'd like to wipe those out and make smoking a thing that just does not happen on campus.
Well, it's a question, not a proposal. I'm asking because others have raised it with me whether we should further restrict the use of tobacco on campus. And there's been a steady progression over 15 years. There have been we can count at least three different changes of policy which have tried to steadily reduce the visibility and so forth of smoking. But it's not a step to be taken lightly. And it's and I put it before the Senate as well as staff and clerical groups, the and student organizations and others as a question. I'll be very happy to abide by any consensus that emerges. And if we don't have consensus, we'll probably have to keep things where they are and talk about it a little further. So it's not a step to be taken casually, and I didn't mean for it to sound like something we were dead set on doing, because we're not.
Do you have any sense of what percentage of the student body or the staff smoke?
Mm-hmm. Or we have surveys that say it's a single digit, certainly among the student body. But, you know, it's as was raised at the Senate yesterday, there are, for instance, a lot of our international students. It's much more prevalent, it appears, among our international students than our domestic students. And we want to think carefully about imposing a cultural preference on them.
At the same Senate meeting, David Sanders, the chairman of the Senate, brought up an idea that I wanted to get your response to. He said there are some places, some universities, where the faculty will give some sort of recommendations or some sort of evaluations to the president and the provost and other high-level administrators. And I thought back to what you have said on this program and many other places of making this place a little more business-like in some ways. And I thought, you know, I've worked in organizations where they've had these sort of 360-degree evaluations. You evaluate up and down the organizational structure. What would be your response to the idea of the faculty giving you an annual evaluation?
Well, first of all, I've talked to Professor Sanders about this before. What he's mainly talking about is reviews of department heads. You heard him talk about that at the meeting, and deans. Now, he might not know this, but Purdue has used on a very regular basis 360-degree evaluations for deans and for top administrators, and it's a good practice to do that. Whether we need some annual survey, sort of like the student evaluations that are on our faculty that sometimes, by the way, do cause some concern and problems. I don't know. Not clear to me how widespread this practice is elsewhere, but, you know, the general point of, as you know, our in many ways, we are trying to emphasize the measurement of performance. My contract, many other contracts right now are already in that mode.
Let's talk a little bit about that because one of the other things that happened at a recent trustee meeting was discussing your at-risk pay and compensation for the year. The trustees this year gave you a 96% rating of 96% of the $210,000 that was at risk. What was your reaction to that assessment of your performance?
I think that's about as high as it should ever go. If it got any higher, then we set the targets too low. The whole I'm happy about the fact that that when calculated based on the quantitative measures, it came out that well. And I've said on each occasion that this really reflects the work of others. And it reflects that things have gone well across the university, that we've had the strong enrollments and more diversity and great fundraising and record-breaking research and all these things that are part of that formula. And so on that front, very, very pleased, of course. But the caution is that this was the highest of the years we've done it. I think we had 88 and 92 maybe were the last 2 years. And again, if the percent gets too high, if the grade gets too high, then we need to raise the targets for the next year, and we will.
What do you know about how those targets are set? Because I was looking at some, they evaluate you in four or five broad categories, and in a lot of those, it seems like you would be able to take the data that the university already has and make some sort of projection about maybe kind of where you're going to fall there. Perhaps well in advance of the trustee meeting where they say, and here's what the pay has been, or well in advance of the executive session where it's actually decided. So being that you can forecast a lot of these things, is that an advantage in some ways to you to know kind of where you may stack up when all of this is finally added together?
Well, it's not the way it works. I mean, yeah, history is some guide, but this question isn't, what's a number we can hit? The question is, what number do we want? What improvement should we aim for to make Purdue better next year than it was this year? And both the selection of what to measure and where the target is something we work out mutually with the board. In at least one important case. The targets, this is in the development or fundraising area, are identical to the targets I set with the head of that office. And, she and I are, and I'm always trying to stretch them up, and we do. And then I adopt those and just incorporate them into the goals that I have. So she and I are completely aligned. And believe me, if you just look at the growth, these aren't easy targets to hit. And
well, I wanted to ask you about that specifically because, interestingly, out of the 25% of the number that's assigned to development or fundraising, that was actually the one you scored lowest on, 22 out of 25 possible percent. And this despite a lot of talk about good fundraising in the last year or two. Did that surprise you at all?
No, because we knew what we were taking on. For instance, the previous year, which was a record, an all-time record, did include the biggest single gift Purdue's ever received, $40 million from the Lilly Endowment, which wasn't going to repeat this immediate past year. And so that was a tall mountain to climb. But I said to Amy Noah, we're going to go ahead and set the target higher anyway. And we didn't quite make it, but we certainly beat all previous records when you discount that one-time event of the Lilly gift.
Can we talk a little bit about the language that surrounds your at-risk pay? Because there was some talk when it changed from being 30% to 50%, and that number 50% has been used a lot. But I wanted to, if I could, for the listeners, put that in context a little bit. It's an amount equal to 50% of your base pay. So really, it's a third of your possible
pay. Correct.
It's 33%. Wouldn't it be better to couch it in those terms?
Feel free.
And so then I went and looked at also the bonuses that the trustees are now giving you for staying in the job, hopefully to the end of your contract is what they're hoping for. And they increased the incentive amount by $50,000 for each of this year and the next four. And so when you look at that, the amount of at-risk pay goes down over the course of those 5 years, if you stick around, to less than a quarter of your possible compensation is actually at risk. And so I'm wondering if we should change the dialogue a little bit about how much is actually on the table that you might possibly lose if you don't meet these metrics.
Well, report it any way you like. At the end, we're just trying to establish a principle. It wasn't here before. It's not at most other universities now, at least in the fashion we're using it. And you know, the point is anything short of straight-A performance money, people can judge for themselves whether it's enough or not, will be forfeited or not received. And that's a system that I thought was appropriate. And if you think a different balance is in order, you might be right.
Well, I'm not the one to decide your compensation. Clearly, the trustees are your boss and not me. But when you look at all of the money that was available to you this year and all the money that you earned, it's close to 99% of all the available dollars. And so I know you're talking about the principle of at-risk pay, but when the president loses only 1% of the possible at-risk pay, you know, what kind of message is that sending about this principle you're trying to instill?
Well, apparently it's not impressing you, so maybe maybe we don't have it right. Look, Stan, when we got here, I asked for a cut in pay. I'm still in the bottom third, with all this counted, in the bottom third of the Big Ten, and I'm fine with that. You and I have had this conversation before. If money was my object in life, I wouldn't be here. There were other choices, and we simply try to establish a system. We've tried to establish a system that emphasizes continuous improvement, that says that whoever holds my job and now a number of other top jobs at Purdue is held accountable and is at risk. If we don't have enough risk in it, then that's a good question for future years.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. Remember to send your questions for the show to news@wbaa.org and tweet them at @WBAAnews on Twitter. We talked in previous programs about you being close at that time to finding a Purdue Polytechnic home. We've now found that. You've had the official ceremony. It's on the near east side of Indianapolis along Washington Street there, a former kind of in factory industrial mm-hmm. site.
Battery factory.
Are you happy with the location?
I'm happy with the location, excited about the whole project, very apprehensive at the same time.
Why do you say that?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the whole project. They're very risky business. The school will be taking students. There'll be a lottery early next year because there's going to be more demand than there's spots. And as you know, the goal is that however prepared these students are when they arrive, 4 years later, we want them ready for the world and ready for Purdue in many cases. So that's a tall order and not something we've done before. But what an exciting prospect if we can pull it off. And what an essential prospect. You and I have talked on this program about the sad deficiency in terms of the number of students in the Indianapolis public schools and similar districts around the state producing college-ready kids. So a great project, but one that is a little bit daunting. And with regard to the building itself, much the same. It's in a great location, we think. It's in a neighborhood that's trying to get to come back. The city and the mayor was there very excited because they see this school as a new anchor and a big boost to the Near East Side of Indianapolis, beyond just the educational value that we hope it'll bring. And so that's really great. On the other hand, it's a very old building. It's getting it ready and cleaned up and doing all that at an affordable price is another thing to be concerned about. But we're going for this in full view that it's anything but a sure thing, because we think the payoff, if we can create a pipeline for inner city kids who otherwise would never make it to Purdue or might not be ready for the workforce, then we should try.
Any concern that the retrofitting might take longer than you need it to?
They don't think so. I mean, after all, we're going to be in a temporary building for the first year. The city which owns the building, it fell into their hands, I guess, some time ago, is going to take some responsibility for getting it ready, clean up, and so forth. I'm a little more concerned that the that there'll be unexpected costs, then that the time frame can't be met. But good question, and both those things are we'll worry about until we know we don't have to.
You mentioned the neighborhood that it's in, and it's nearby to the Irvington neighborhood there on the far east end of Washington Street. A little bit to the west of that, you've got, for instance, the Angie's List headquarters. Mm-hmm. But it kind of in between there, it looks a little sketchy, especially if you go through there at night. Are you at all worried about the want of parents to send their kids to a neighborhood that does still have some rehabilitation to go?
We'll see, but we started getting calls the morning after the announcement, and I saw the head of the program just last night, and he said we're well above the 150 number that we can accept in the first class. And he said that a number of the inquiries and applications are from well outside the neighborhood. You know, it's interesting, Stan. Years ago, I was part of starting an inner-city school, which has succeeded and thrived and spread in, if anything, an even tougher area of town. And it was very interesting. There are a lot of parents who really want, who could send their children to schools where in better neighborhoods, let's say, or where the student body is more affluent, who really want their students to have a diverse experience, their children to have a diverse experience. And as long as they're convinced that there will be reasonable safety and a really strong academic program, there are parents who would prefer their students to go to school with young people very different than themselves.
And we should say the same thing actually does happen here in the greater Lafayette area between people deciding, especially people who would move to work at the university, deciding whether they live in the Lafayette School Corporation or the West Lafayette School uh-huh. Corporation. Same sort of calculus.
I think so. Now, I had the same feeling in both experiences. My excitement, enthusiasm for these projects is about the young people who need a better school and don't have better options. So I appreciate there is a lot of value in having a mix of students. But our principal focus at the Polytechnic High School will be on those who may need something different, may need something a little better to make it to college and to great careers. So, you know, just yesterday, we had a great program here on campus. Our College of Liberal Arts organized a conference on the 50th anniversary of the Coleman Report, which some folks say was the most consequential and social science research project maybe of the last half century. And it turns out Jim Coleman was a Purdue grad, chemical engineer, who then veered off because he became interested in social sciences at Columbia. But one of his principal findings, one was that it wasn't the money, that educational achievement, as we've learned over and over and over again, is really more about family environment and support for education. But also, the other factor he found was that a heterogeneous student body was very, very helpful. So students from backgrounds that weren't getting educational support at home, went to school with students who were, it was associated with greater success. So up to some point, I think it probably would be helpful if the high school drew students from not just the immediate neighborhood. But under the laws, there'll be a lottery, and everybody who stays in the lottery has an equal chance, except that there is preference for students in the near proximity.
I wanted to put to you a question that came to us on Twitter following the last trustees meeting. There was a slide that was shown showing that Purdue's endowment has come down just a little bit in the last year from about $2.4 billion to about $2.25 billion. And I tweeted that fact, and then a Purdue engineering graduate tweeted back at me and asking a question that I thought I would put to you because I don't know the answer. And the person says, well, wait, how? The S&P is up 7% in the last year. You have a better grasp on macroeconomics, I think, than I do. So I thought I would put that to you.
Yeah. Well, first timing, this was fiscal year 16, so it's the last half of 15 in the first half of this year. So it doesn't catch all the increase that he's talking about. But it's a very good question. That endowment is managed for the long term and cautiously, I will say. I mean, that's revisited by that board on a regular basis. And if anything, the investment philosophy probably a little more cautious now than before. By the way, I don't know of an endowment or money management folks these days who are very different from that. It's that kind of environment. But if you look back 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, the average is right around 5% growth. So there are years like 14 was a plus 17%. They average out with the years that aren't so good. But in our peer group, the average was under zero last year, between 1% and 2%. So we're not too far off of that, and what you hope is that, as in the past, an off year will be balanced by something better. But we've got very serious people reviewing this all the time at PRF, on that board and on that staff. And
there was also some talk about how Purdue might divest just a little bit from hedge funds, go down from, yeah, I think, 25 to 15% or something like that. And one of the things that was said was, we think we're paying a little too much in fees, mm-hmm, and so the university is not reaping as much profit as it otherwise might. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And again, this is a trend across money management generally. A lot of people seeing that These active hedge funds have not been performing very well, and they have fees that are higher than you might pay elsewhere. So those fees didn't seem like much when they were turning in double-digit returns, but when they aren't, then it puts them under the scope, and that's the way it ought to be. So yes, you're absolutely correct. When I said the philosophy is becoming a little more cautious, that's a good example.
How does the university invest? Just in our last minute or so, I'm trying to make sense of this, thinking about my own investments, and the advice I get is put it in an index fund, let it go for 40 years, and you'll be fine. Does the university have a similar long-term strategy like what you were talking about?
Yes, and there's a mix of so-called passive, with the index funds, a perfect example, versus active, where people who believe they can do better than the market as a whole sell their services and pick stocks or other instruments. And consistent with this more cautious approach that I've mentioned, the board and our managers have decided to shift more in the passive direction, where, again, fees are lower and the performance, recently, has been as good or better. So I think the thing to take away is this is a very long term. It's a trust. The most important thing we can do is try to protect what is there, grow it, but not be reckless ever about it. And meanwhile, folks like Amy Noe and I will be out working our tails off to try to bring in new money and grow it that way.
All right. This has been the Monthly Conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for listening on this station. We'll talk to you again next month.
Major support for the Monthly Conversation with Mitch Daniels comes from Gaylor Electric. Gaylor provides electrical services from pre-construction design through project completion and a 24/7 service department. Information at gaylor.com. Support also comes from Purdue University Press, publishing global scholarship and popular regional work since 1960, and featuring Calculated Risk, The Supersonic Life and Times of Gus Grissom, available in June. More at thepress.purdue.edu.